Hello, everybody, and welcome to Medical Monday, April 8th. I'm Alan Chartok. Support comes from Saratoga OBGYN at Myrtle Street and the new physician midwife pregnancy care model at Saratoga Hospital, saratogahospital.org. For more information, joining us today is Dr. Devin Savla of Ellis Medicine, a primary care physician. He commonly treats issues such as high blood pressure, diabetes, and obesity. Going to be a busy hour, 1-800-348-2551. Let me give you that again. Write it down, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Savla and your calls all coming up on Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Dr. Devin Savla of Ellis Medicine joins us today, a primary care physician. He commonly treats issues such as high blood pressure, diabetes, and obesity. Dr. Savla practices at Ellis Medicine in Mohawk Harbor location in Schenectady, New York. He's board certified in family medicine and obstetrics. Welcome to Medical Monday, doctor.
Thank you very much, Alan.
To join today's conversation, everybody, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. So, I guess the first question I want to ask you is, why is diabetes on the march?
It comes primarily from two issues. One is our growing epidemic in terms of obesity, and second, from the availability of really poor quality, cheap food. So both of those just drive obesity and diabetes and make them worse.
Let's go to Jim in Matamoros. Okay, Jim, keep it short. Go.
How common is pyroplasmosis getting to be around here?
Okay, before we go on any further, you know, I'm not the doctor, but I don't know what pyroplasmosis is. Could you just tell me what it is?
Also known as babesiosis.
Oh, babesiosis. Okay.
Right. Okay. Doctor.
So, I mean, depends on what you're talking about in terms of common. It's relatively less common as a medical condition. It's more common in our area in the Northeast because it's a tick-borne illness compared to the rest of the U.S. Still relatively a rare thing. You know, if you're not in the outdoors, if you're not exposed to ticks, it's really not something you could contract.
And, doctor, is Lyme much? You're more likely to get Lyme than
sure.
Babesiosis.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, Jim. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. All right. And now 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are excellent. 1-800-348-2551. And now to Sylvester in Cornwall. Sylvester, you're on.
Okay. I'll tell you what happened here. I'm cleaning out a building and I had to get a cat out. The little sucker got me. Do I have to worry about rabies or rabies shots?
Okay, you're busting up, so I'm not sure we could hear exactly what the question is. You said you had a cat a bite? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay, a cat bite and rabies. Should he go to a hospital?
He should certainly see a physician for a cat bite. I don't know if he necessarily needs a rabies shot. Was it a cat you own?
No. It's a cat in a building I was working on.
I mean, rabies is relatively rare in cats. Cat bites can cause a number of other infections. Because of the nature of the bite, it's relatively deep, and it's easy to get bacteria deep into the skin, so should be seen by a physician, but we would traditionally not give rabies shots for cat bites.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Go see a doctor, right?
Oh, you're welcome.
Right. Okay, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. The next person who makes a call gets on the air. I can promise you that. Okay, doctor, tell me about, you and I are practicing the same thing. You and I are on, at least a modified intermittent fasting diet.
Yes.
I follow the eminent doctor, Dr. Fung, on this. Is this something you're seeing more of now?
It is, and it's actually something I'm recommending more as well. If you think about it biochemically, when our bodies evolved, we lived in a state of, you know, intermittent fasting. You know, when our genetic ancestors were developing, they were never sure when they were going to get food. So now if you have 3 square meals, as much as you can eat every day, you're going to get more food than you need and
too much.
Gain weight.
And then, as you said, obesity and then diabetes.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Okay, so how do you do it? In my case, I eat until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That means 16 hours on, and that means I can't eat till 8 o'clock the next morning, because you're supposed to eat within an 8-hour eating window.
Well, you can pick a window that works for you, and some people are more strict than others. So, you know, some people can only manage a 10-hour eating window. Some people can make it as small as a 6-hour eating window. But the idea is that you limit your calories by limiting when you can eat. So for myself, I have my first meal at lunchtime, which is about noon.
Right.
You know, after I see my last patient of the morning. I get home about 6:30. I have dinner before 7. So maybe I'm a 6-7-hour window.
Well, wait a second now. If you see your last patient at noon, what happens between noon and 6?
Let me correct myself. That's my last patient of the morning session.
I get it.
And then, you know, whenever I was trying to eat less before, I would always snack in between meals. I would always get seconds. And restricting myself to this, it seemed to work.
It works for me, I can tell you that much. Okay, let's go to Jerry in Austerlitz. Hello, Jerry.
Hello.
You're
on. This is Jerry in Austerlitz.
We got you. You're on.
Okay, hi. I have a question about what is the proper way and measurement of blood pressure. My problem is when I see a doctor or whatever, my blood pressure spikes. I take it at home, sitting in a chair with my arm at the right level, I get normal readings. But anytime I go in to see a doctor, they basically lean me up against the wall and slap a cuff on and take one reading and say, you have high blood pressure.
White coat disease.
Yes.
Certainly could be white coat disease, but if you're talking about just the measurement of the blood pressure itself, you shouldn't have a shirt on. It should be over a bare skin.
Mm-hmm.
You should be sitting and resting comfortably for at least 5 minutes, no strenuous physical activity just before you measure it. It's best to measure it in the upper arm. You know, these wrist devices that you see nowadays are really fancy,
mm-hmm.
but they're not well validated. You should measure both arms at the same time. There are some rare but significant blood vessel disease problems that can cause different...
Is that right? You should take it off one arm and put it on the other one and do that too?
Yeah.
I've never done that. Yeah.
You shouldn't always measure it on the same arm.
Okay.
And that's the correct way to measure it.
Okay. I mean, I usually, if I slap the cuff on and I'm sitting at home, the first reading is usually high. But then if I sit and calmly for 5 minutes, it goes down to an acceptable level these days. I'm not sure exactly what that is anymore, but...
Yeah, so it's actually normal for your blood pressure to be higher when you're doing strenuous physical activity.
Sure.
So it really should be measured after resting for 5 minutes.
After resting. So after resting is what they should base medication on?
If you're doing regular blood pressure checks, then it mm-hmm. should be after 5 minutes of resting, yeah.
Right, but what I'm saying is they base you, giving you blood pressure medication to lower your blood pressure based on your resting rate?
Correct.
Correct, okay.
Thank you, Jerry. Okay, now 1-800-348-2551. We've got one more call on the line, and then you're on. 1-800-348-2551. Remember the old Johnny Carson routine, where he used to give you the answer before he looked at the question. The answer to the next question is yes. All right, let's go to Ann in Catskill. Ann, you're on.
Oh, yes, good afternoon. I was working outside yesterday, and in the evening I felt a sharp pain in my arm and found a deer tick biting me. I took it out, and I think I have the whole thing, and I've kept it. But I have a very big red mark there now, a big circle. I'm seeing a doctor tomorrow. Is this something that I should be concerned about? It's painful.
Well, yes and no. Yes, you should see a doctor. No, you shouldn't be overly concerned so long as you see a doctor and get appropriate treatment.
Yeah. What do you usually, what would they normally give you treatment for something like that?
So for something like that, you know, the most significant risk is the chance of developing Lyme disease. So it doesn't happen from every tick bite. It's more common if a tick has been on you for more than 24 or 48 hours.
But that wasn't the case.
Still, you should receive prophylactic treatment to prevent it.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Let me also take this opportunity, Alan, just to mention that I'm giving advice for information only and really is not a substitute for seeing a doctor.
Yeah, we're not going to sue you on this.
I appreciate
that. Thank you. Okay.
But I have to say it.
Yeah, you certainly. It's a good idea. And that's always true on the show, and I think we should always say that. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. And now for... I told you, by the way, the answer was yes to that question.
Remember? You did. You were right.
And now for Kim in Springfield... and this is going to be an answer. I believe the answer is yes, but we'll find out. All right, go ahead, Doc. Go ahead, Kim.
Yes, I was wondering if you're on a low-carb diet, will that reverse diabetes? Atkins recommends that, but I was wondering if it's true.
Oh, that's a very good question. And it gets into the nature of diabetes. So, you know, I would say it's a bit of a semantic question. I would say once you're a diabetic, you're always a diabetic, but if you're on the appropriate diet and the appropriate treatment, you can entirely remove the risk of diabetes. So you can get your blood sugar numbers down same as a normal person, and then you really don't have any further, you know, significant risk that you would have if those sugars weren't controlled. But as soon as you get off that diet, as soon as you stop, you know, that strict control, then your numbers can go up again.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Okay, thank you. Kim. All right, and now on to a break, and we'll be right back. And ladies and gentlemen, we are delighted to be here talking to the doctor, Devin Savla of Ellis Medicine. Okay, let's go now to, we'll go to Michael in West Ghent. All right, Michael, your turn. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. Doctor, Saturday morning I woke up with a subconjunctival hemorrhage in my right eye. And I've also been doing keto and intermittent fasting about 17/7. And the strange thing is that the next morning, 24 hours later, I woke up with the exact same thing in my left eye as well. And this is a bloody, bright redness that starts at the iris and goes toward the bridge of the nose. And I'm wondering if it may have something to do with blood pressure. So we've been talking about a little bit about blood pressure lately. Or could it just simply be age? I'm 66 years old.
You know, there are a number of reasons for subconjunctival hemorrhage. Trauma, more likely, I presume you would remember if you were punched in the eyes.
Right. Nothing like that happened. I don't even remember rubbing my eyes or having any dry eyes or anything like that. I've never been a...
It can certainly be high blood pressure, but it can just be one of those things that happens due to age. Unless there's any... You know, visual disturbance or any other problem, it's really not a significant issue.
Well, you know, I've been reading...
And the fact that it happened in one eye and then 24 hours later happened in the other eye, could it be something other than a hemorrhage?
The next most likely cause is infectious. So there's a number of viral infections that can infect the surface of the eye, and that's the other most likely thing.
And what other symptoms would there be with that? Because I have no itching, I have no discharge, I have no...
Oh, well, those would be the two most common. So if it's not one of those, then I would definitely follow up with your physician or make sure you get a good eye exam. But
thanks, Michael. Okay, now let's go to Donna in Woodstock. Donna in Woodstock, 1-800-348-2551. Go, Donna.
Hi, I'm thin and old and decrepit, and I have my blood pressure measured, and they always have to use a child's one. And I want to know, is that accurate?
Oh, yes. So the blood pressure I should have mentioned this also earlier. It has to be measured with the right size cuff for your arm. So if the cuff is too large or too small for the arm, you get incorrect results. So, depending on how thin you are.
Okay, so using the small one is good.
Yeah, if your arm is that thin.
You know, I always have to tell them. But does it matter, like, your muscle tone? I know I need exercise.
Muscle tone won't change your blood pressure unless you're flexing during the exam, which you shouldn't do.
Right. I've tried that. That's fun.
Okay, Donna, thank you. Okay, and now on to Roger in New Lebanon, of all places. Roger, you're on.
Hello. Hi.
Hey.
Yeah. I had a very high blood pressure soaring into, 200s in it. I was going into the hospital, and they found out I had prostate cancer, and I had my prostate taken out. It was number 4 on the Gleason scale or whatever, and they said it was pretty, the doctor, when he took it out, Jonas Marshall, said it was pretty rough cancer. It was a good thing I got it out. My blood pressure is normal now. Is that some kind of sign? I was dealing with somebody recently, and they have high blood pressure. They have cancer, and I wondered if that was a sign that that was a type of cancer that gave you high blood pressure. I'm just...
As far as I'm aware, there's no association between prostate cancer and blood pressure. Now, you can have cancer and benign tumors of the adrenal gland, which can cause blood pressure. That's the gland that releases steroid hormones and cortisol, which control blood pressure. But nothing to do with the prostate.
So a benign tumor in the adrenal gland can cause high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a test for that?
Well, it's quite a rare thing. It comes with a number of other symptoms. So when you see a physician for an evaluation of blood pressure, that's part of the questions they ask.
Thank you, Roger. All right. And now on to Jim in Malta. Jim, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for having this show. I'm 75 years old, and I've been taking baby aspirin probably for 10, 11 years, and my blood pressure is under control. But about 14, 15 months ago, I started to easily bruise, especially the back of my hands, when I moderately banged them into something like taking an apple out of the refrigerator. And I was told it's due to the aspirin and just age, and there's really nothing that can be done about it. Like, I'm looking right now at my left hand. I have a big 2-inch bruise on it because I was taking something out of the dryer. The only thing I was told that could be done about it is using some cosmetic treatment, but is there anything that can be done, and is that a sign of anything more serious?
Unfortunately, there's not anything that can be done, and it's almost certainly the cause is aspirin and aging, thinning skin. One thing you should speak with your physician about is what are your risk factors and whether or not you really need the aspirin, which is a decision for everybody based on, what their medical history is and what their risk factors are.
Now, there have been a lot of people, doctor, who have been, a lot of reports now on aspirins, the 81 milligram, I've been taking one of those for 1,000 years. There was one report I said basically didn't work, didn't really help.
So, that's an interesting question. It was one of our biggest recommendations for heart disease prevention, sure. It may have done nothing. Especially for those healthy people who have no other risk factors. They have such a low risk of heart disease as it is. Go ahead.
I started taking the first, it was a full dose aspirin, because about 2009, when I was doing a very strenuous hike, I had what was attributed to be a mini stroke.
Mm-hmm.
But it came and went, and they couldn't find any information deciding whether that was the real cause. But they put me on full aspirin for several months, and then baby aspirin ever since. Would I be one of those people who might be eligible to stop taking aspirin?
With a history of stroke in the past, you would not. So
even though it was 10 years ago?
The evidence for people who have had heart disease in the past is much more clear, and the prevention for a second episode of either heart attack or stroke, the aspirin is warranted.
Okay, thank you. I guess I'll just wear mittens over the summer or something.
Jim, thank you. 1-800-348-2551. We got one guy on the phone, John from Williamstown, and after him, you're on. So we'll go to John in Williamstown. You're on, John.
Hey, Doc. I was just wondering, the top 5 killers in the United States are pretty much all based upon the abuse of our most widely abused drug, and that's food. When we're going to be trying to talk about, let's say, another sector of the economy, fuel efficiency, we try to cut costs on fuel. We try to be more efficient with our fuel. Would you say probably the biggest reason why America is in the healthcare predicament we're in is because of the way we're taking care of ourselves?
To a certain extent, I would agree with that. Now, you have to remember that, you know, people die, everyone dies. The top killers are going to be heart attack and cancer, no matter what we do. And that's actually a triumph of our public health system, that it's not, you know, pneumonia and tuberculosis that are killing people anymore.
It's more self-inflicted, right?
The idea, and I recently read an article, there's a new concept called, rather than life, rather than how long you live, there's a new concept about how long you have a healthy life. So how long you live still able to do everything you want. And I think that comes down to taking better care of ourselves. You know, the longer you can... go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it seems like the way you should start is, of course, with the younger generation, because food is, you know, one of the things you do need. You do need food, like you do need, you know, water and air. And it's just, kids have no idea where their food comes from. I'm going to say if most people had to actually harvest their own food, and then, I mean, even like slaughtering animals, they probably wouldn't eat meat, number one. And it's a big eye-opener as far as, you know, for kids learning where food comes from and understanding what a good diet entails and, you know, along with exercise, how that is probably the best health care you can get that money can buy, is good eating and good lifestyle and not being sedentary. And
okay, John, thank you for that. I appreciate it, and you're absolutely right. You are. Thanks again.
Thanks.
Okay, and now let's go to Don in Mount Tremper, 1-800-348-2551. Don, you're on. Hello,
yeah,
Don.
Yeah, I had a question about blood sugar. I'm diabetic, and it's my understanding that a range of between 80 and, let's say, 150 is a good range to be in. Do some people, because of their metabolism, require maybe a little bit higher blood sugar than other people?
I'm going to say no, Don. You don't need that much blood sugar. Some people, because of their metabolism, diabetics can't control their blood sugar well enough, but you don't need more blood sugar. What happens is, because your insulin isn't working properly, your blood sugar goes up, because that's necessary for your body to function. But if you can get that under control, it's much better for you.
But if your fasting number, when you get up in the morning, I like to see something under 90 or below.
If you can get your fasting number below 100, that means you're a very well-controlled diabetic.
You're in control. Okay, thank you very much.
And what would you say would be a low number that could become true? Does that vary between people?
A low number would be below 60. And in that case, you know, that's a significant issue. That's not enough sugar for your cells to function. You should be taking, candy or orange juice, or if you're on insulin, medicine to raise your sugar.
If that happens.
Yeah.
Thanks, Don. Okay, and now on to, Laura in Latham, of course. That's what we call alliteration. Laura in Latham, you're on.
Hi there. I'm calling with a question. Why do they not do nutritional analyses of people's bodies to see what they need before putting them on medication? And also, another part of that is blood sugar issues can often result from years of undiagnosed problems with thyroid and other things. So both things kind of depend on, you know, somebody's nutritional state of being. The gentleman who called a few minutes ago and mentioned that he was getting lots of bruising, could that be a nutritional, a lack of certain vitamins in his body?
So as far as nutrition is concerned, Laura, if you have a varied and healthy diet, if you're getting lean meats, enough vegetables, almost certainly you don't have a vitamin deficiency. When it comes to
That's also rare, though.
Hey, Laura, let him finish. Go ahead, Doctor.
When it comes to testing for nutritional deficiencies, you know, we really don't have a great understanding of what particular let me clarify that. Some nutritional deficiencies cause significant illness. But if you have a general poor nutritional state, it's, you know, very difficult for us to pinpoint a particular disease that comes from that. So, you know, it really doesn't make sense to do a nutritional analysis because that information isn't going to necessarily tell us what illness you have or be beneficial at all.
Thank you. Okay, now we're going to go to Jamie in Amherst, Massachusetts, my favorite city in Western Massachusetts. Go ahead, Jamie, you're on.
Good afternoon, doctors. Really enjoying this show. I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes and put on the standard pill medication. Then I wasn't eating properly, so they recommended that I go to the insulin shot, which
sure.
I realized I didn't want to do. So I've been seeing an integrative health management doctor who steered me to Jason Fung, which is
exactly.
great. And I'm using I'm using berberine, and I have brought my A1C under control without advancing to the shots of insulin. So my question is, have you heard of a recent thing that's being advertised as a patch with 5 herbs in it that you put on, and it brings your blood sugar into the right zone within a very short amount of time? Have you heard anything at all about that?
I'll be honest, I have not.
Nor have I, and I look at it all the time. I look at that stuff all the time, being in your class. So
you mentioned
You
mentioned one thing that I like to tell my diabetic patients, which is, you know, no medicine that I can give you will control your sugar more than the food you eat. You know, and if you eat, you can eat through any amount of insulin and raise your sugar still. So diet control is vital for diabetics.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
I agree, and I've learned a lot from Jason Fung, and I'm also doing, you know, the intermittent fasting, and I have stopped craving foods, and I've stopped being starving all the time because I'm not continually feeding my body all the time. I feel great.
Good
well,
point. What is your schedule? I'm fascinated by that.
Well, I have breakfast at 10 a.m., and I have dinner at 6, so it's about, you know, whatever those numbers are, 10 and 6 are my numbers.
10 to 6, 10 to 12.
And I'm not hungry at night, and I sleep well, and I have coffee in the morning and then breakfast at 10.
Jamie, good story. Thank you very much. All right, and now we'll go over to Judith in Dalton. All right, Judith in Dalton, you're on. Go.
Hello, thank you.
Go.
My son has COPD, and he has now been diagnosed with too much red blood cells. So he's on oxygen. So I thought that should take care of it. But every month they draw blood. And I wonder, is that going to be corrected, or is that a sign from the COPD itself or from the lack of oxygen?
He's
on oxygen. So why wouldn't that take care of it? That's what I meant.
Well, he's on oxygen, but unfortunately he still has the COPD. So his body is still requiring.
That means that he's always going to have that high red blood count?
That may come down as his COPD and his oxygen needs are controlled.
Uh-huh.
All right, thank you.
And that's the only thing they can do is draw from his
That's the easiest treatment for high red blood cells, yeah.
Uh-huh. And it's dangerous to have that, I assume.
Unfortunately, it is. It increases your chance of having blood clots because your blood is thicker.
I see.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you. Okay, Lance is left on the phone. We're going to take a short break and then come around for the last third of the program. Lance, you stay where you are. You've been a good guy, and we will find you in a moment. And we are back with Dr. Davin Savla of Ellis Medicine, who's joining us today. He's a primary care physician. He treats issues such as high blood pressure, diabetes, and obesity. And here we are, as promised, over to Lance in New Paltz. Lance, you're on.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about cholesterol and the cholesterol numbers. There's the number that they get that you get when you have your cholesterol done in it, and there's the guide that tells you if it's high or low. But then there's also the ratio that you get. And I'm wondering what the doctor feels is more important, which is more important, the actual cholesterol number or your good cholesterol to bad cholesterol ratio?
We tend to focus more on the actual number, especially the actual number of the bad cholesterol.
The reason I ask is because my cholesterol is on the higher side of normal, but the last blood work I had basically came back with my ratio saying below average risk of heart attack, of heart disease, or stroke. So on one level, I have my doctor telling me I need to get the numbers down. On the other hand, I have my, you know, the lab telling me that I have a lower risk of you know, having heart issues. So it's a little bit confusing.
So you have a comparatively lower risk than someone with the same number, but your risk of heart disease is still higher than someone with a normal cholesterol.
Okay, that's all I needed to know.
Thanks, Lance. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll talk to Tom. And after that, it's yours. If you can call right now, let's go on to Tom in Woodstock. All right, Tom, you're on.
Hey, Tom. Hi, Doctor. Hi, Alan.
Hey.
I just want to make a brief comment about intermittent fasting. I've been doing it for about 50 years. I'm 69. Whoa. Not by choice, but because I just feel better, and I always have. But I was pleased to hear about it because I don't really feel hungry throughout the day until evening, so I pretty much eat at night. And I've been hounded by friends and family my entire life that I'm, you know, not eating right, and I'm doing myself a disservice, but I take no medication. My doctor tells me I'm as healthy as I can be, particularly for someone my age, and I just thought you might like to know that, and it was very gratifying to hear about this. I probably am in the seven-hour period for eating, and the rest of the time I don't.
As my mother would say, they're all doing it now. That's great, Tom. That's great.
Thank you for that.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
All right, and now over to Patrick in Troy. Patrick in Troy, you're on. Patrick.
Yes.
You're on. It's your turn. You're on the air.
All right.
You're the star.
I was trying. What's that?
You're the star. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was trying to listen to the person who's talking now during the delay because it sounds like he has a similar question to mine. But anyway, I'm 68 years old, and I don't know if I should be concerned or consider myself fortunate, but I never feel hungry. I mean, I can't remember the last time I felt hungry. Should I be concerned?
Let me ask you this. How much food do you eat?
I eat a good breakfast, and I eat a hearty...
You can be not hungry because you're eating way too much food, so make sure you're getting a healthy diet.
I'm not overweight. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
In that case, I would consider you lucky.
Okay, so it's nothing to be concerned about, just the absence of those hunger pains that I kind of remember from my younger days. We'll go for a ride on a Saturday, and we'll go for hours, and my wife will say she's starving, and I don't feel hungry. Anyway. Yeah,
as long as you're eating healthy and you're at a normal weight, more power to you.
All right.
Thank you, Patrick. Okay, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Charlene, but before we do, I want to say, if you call right now, you're on the air. All right, Charlene, you're on.
Hi. I'm intrigued by this Fung diet you keep mentioning, and I want to know where I can find out more about it.
Go on to the internet and look up Dr. Jason Fung, F-O-N-G, and you'll find all you can do. He's got thousands of questions that people ask him every day about this. Now, there are some people who have some objections to the diet, one of which is that he doesn't seem to be concerned about too much meat, whereas there are other doctors
who do. I assume, like yourself, Alan, that you control that yourself, right? Is that
absolutely
possible
with that diet? Sure. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. You do. My general diet is not that you asked is during that 8 hours I have egg whites in the morning, and then I have coffee, black coffee, decaf, and then for lunch I have chopped up salmon over a bed of lettuce in my sushi place, Ichiban. And then that's pretty much it. I don't do much more than that after that. And the numbers will come the diabetic numbers come way, way down. It's unbelievable, unbelievably so.
Well, is it supposed to be just for diabetics?
No, not at all. No.
Okay. All right, I'll check it out. Thank you so much.
A lot of people use it for weight loss. Okay, bye. Okay, and now on to 1-800-348-2551. And now on to Steve in Albany. Steve in Albany, your turn.
Hey, doctor.
Hi.
I take aspirin every day just I don't know why. I'm healthy as could be, but I still take one. Should I be taking it or no?
So the new recommendation as far as aspirin is concerned, if you don't have any cardiac risk factors, like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes. If you don't have a significant family history of
heart disease, I don't have any diabetes. I don't have high blood pressure. I don't have anything.
Then there's really not. You're really not getting any benefit from the aspirin.
What if your mother and father died of heart attacks?
So that would be a significant family history of diabetes, right, or of heart disease, in which case there is some benefit to it.
Yeah.
I don't have any family history of that either.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Talk it over with your doctor if you have any questions.
Right. That's a good point. Always a good point. All right, and now on to David in Hyde Park. Okay, David in Hyde Park on line number 3. You're on, David.
Yes, thank you. I'm 77 years old, and I also have a good deal of bruising on my hands and arms. And I was recently told by my primary care physician that I had low white blood cell count.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that?
I am, yes.
And would that be a cause of the bruising?
Not likely, no. White blood cells are the cells that deal with infection, and they don't really have a role in bruising.
Hmm. Okay, all right. Very good. Well, okay. I will go back to him and talk to him more
sure
about it.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, here we go.
Thanks.
Okay, and now on to Dale in Albany, 1-800-348-2551. Dale in Albany.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Love the show. So I'm 46 years old and basically pretty good health. And my question is regarding stiffness, like general body stiffness.
Okay.
You know, and I've always been somebody who's not been very flexible. But I've noticed in the last couple of years that, you know, if I'm standing in one position very long or even just sleeping during the night, it's very hard to get up in the morning. I feel like a board, really.
Sure.
It's just I'm not, you know, I'm just very generally stiff if I don't move around. I was just wondering, is that something to really be concerned about, or, you know, what could that be other than just be, you know, getting slightly older?
Unfortunately, it's welcome to middle age, Dave. Or Dale,
okay.
I should say. You know,
yeah.
There are a number of medical causes for stiffness, but what you're describing sounds more like general life, unfortunately.
Okay, man. Thanks. Okay, and now on to Dylan in Amsterdam. They all went down there. Go ahead, Dylan. Dylan. Hey, Dylan, you there with us? Oh, boy. I'm going to count to 5, 1, 2. Get ready, Dylan. 3. Dylan, 4.
Goodbye, Dylan.
5. Goodbye, Dylan. Okay, and now on to, Anna in Albany. Okay, Anna, you're on.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, doctor. My question is, I recently saw a cardiac doctor for ailments that I had many, many years ago. It was just a normal checkup.
Okay.
But he found out that I did have diabetes, and he said, you need to be on a statin. And I said, why? He said, because you're diabetic. And I said, but my numbers are very good.
Yeah.
And he said, it doesn't matter. You're diabetic. And I said, well, I'm not doing it. He said, well, I'm going to have you do this test. It's the calcium score test.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had me do that. And it goes from, I believe it goes from zero to like 1,000, I believe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I had it done. I said, because I'm not going on statins. And it was zero.
Okay.
What is your take on that? Because I'm still concerned that he said, if you're diabetic, you need to be on a statin.
Well, unfortunately, in your case, he's right. So diabetes is a significant enough risk factor for heart disease that we put every diabetic on a statin to reduce their risk.
So that's that,
really?
Anna. That's that, Anna. You learned something, right? Okay, thanks, Anna. Appreciate your call. All right, and now on to, how we say this, Ron in Wilbraham, where everybody owns a pig. Ron, you're on.
Hi, this is Ron, and I have type 2 diabetes, and I've been on various medicines, you know, the metformin, the lastly, it was Invokana, and I was okay. Feeling very nauseous all the time. So my doctor switched me to Trulicity,
okay.
And I'm still having the nausea. Just the thought of food, especially in the morning, just makes me sick. Hmm. Is there anything I can do about that?
You know, there's a wide variety of causes for that. Unfortunately, the most likely is your medication. You have to consider how bad the nausea is compared to controlling your diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thanks, Ron. Mm-hmm. Okay, and now we're getting close to the end, so I'm trying to speed things up here a little bit, if that is possible. So now we're going to go to Clark in Wendell, Massachusetts. Clark, you're on.
Good afternoon, Doctors Fong and Chartok, respectively.
Well, Fong ain't here.
I'm Dr. Savla. That's
Dr.
all right.
Dr. Savla, oh, okay. But Fong is
on the web. I'm calling for a friend who suffers from obesity, and I trust Dr. Chartok enough to be discriminating about who he chooses to advise people. So what advice do you have? Do you have something I could look on the Internet to help her? I want to convince her, as opposed to the 1,000 other opportunities out there.
For
weight loss or weight control.
The most important thing is to be supportive with her efforts to lose weight.
Right.
And try and be as positive as possible.
Okay.
And you may want to have her go look at Jason Fong, F-O-N-G, and see what she thinks. Thanks a lot, Clark. All right, and now we're getting close to the very end. So now we'll go to Sue in Boston Spa. Sue, you're on.
Can I ask?
You're on.
Hi. I have a question about my situation suddenly following breast cancer surgery.
Okay.
And having more bowel movements, losing weight, suddenly having high blood pressure. Are they all interconnected?
You know, those symptoms may be related to your chemotherapy, for sure. Unfortunately, without knowing
radiation,
the
I didn't have chemotherapy.
They can be caused by radiation as well. Without knowing the specifics, it's hard to say what's causing your blood pressure problem, but something to keep following up with your doctor.
Thank you, Sue. Okay, and now on to Carol in Amsterdam. We're really running out of time here, folks. Keep them short. Go ahead, Carol.
Okay, how do you explain having an HDL of 145 and an LDL of 107? My triglycerides are only 54.
Carol, you're one of those very lucky people who has really high good cholesterol.
So that's it.
Well, is it or isn't it?
So there's some interesting studies on longevity which show that people who live past 100 have high good cholesterol.
Okay, Carol, we're moving on. Thank you. And we're going to go now to Bert in Wilton. Bert, we've got to keep it very short, Bert. Go ahead. Go ahead, Bert.
Yeah, hi. I'm calling because I've been diagnosed with high blood pressure based on some high readings in the doctor's office.
Okay.
They've asked me to keep a log at home, and my blood pressure at home is pretty good. But they say I still have high blood pressure. So I'm curious, how does that diagnosis work? What's the test, or how do they come to that conclusion?
The test is checking your blood pressure in your upper arm without any clothes on after sitting and resting for 5 minutes. It has to be high on multiple occasions in order to qualify for the disease. There's also something you should read about called white coat hypertension, which can be high blood pressure in the doctor's office just because you're nervous.
You said with no clothes on. You don't mean you have to take all your clothes off. You just have to
Well, I mean, you can keep your pants on, but not your shirt.
Yeah, I got you. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for that. All right, and then finally, over to Sydney in Kingston. Sydney, you will be the last call. Go ahead, Sydney.
Sydney, you better make
it good. Awesome, thank you. Good afternoon, doctors.
Good afternoon.
I have a quick question. I work the overnight, and I'm trying to diet, but my issue, I wake up 3 to 4 times per sleep cycle, whether I'm sleeping during the day or during the overnight, and I crave sweet food, and no matter what it is, I sleepwalk to the kitchen, I eat a peanut butter and jelly, I'll eat 6 cupcakes throughout the night.
Okay, we got the picture. We got the picture, and we're out of time. Right. Go ahead, Doc. Anything
Sydney, you got to stop buying cupcakes. Yeah. Don't keep them in your house.
Don't do it anymore. Thank you very much, Sydney. We're just about out of time. Thanks to Davan Savla, who of Ellis Medicine, for joining us today. I want to thank everyone who called in. Apologize to those left on the line. Support for the Medical Monday comes from SUNY New Paltz Theater Department, presenting Carlo Goldoni's A Servant of Two Masters, adopted by Oded Gross and Tracy Young, April 11th through the 28th, newpaltz.edu/theater. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer's been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowitz. Our producer's Jim Lavoulis, and I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for the excellent show, The Media Project.